Yo, I put it like wow, this that sound. These oaks don't work hard like me, I hope they know by now. Bayo Bab, stand my ground. Throw these money trees, go overseas like Percy Tau. I make sure you stay around, quiet when I'm under loud. No negatives allowed, me positivity took a vow. I always play to win, don't anticipate loss. Mind always in the cloud, my boy, never think about the drop. Never ever ever think about the drop.
Welcome to Sports Fans. It is the MKT show. I'm MKT. What's happening? As the young people say, what's good? What's good? That's what the young people say. I'm with it. I'm with the young people. Hip and happening. What's hip and happening on the streets? Oh my goodness. The Premier League being back. Oh man. 2 more weeks and then the NFL's back and then I can justify the insulated bachelor life for another year, you know? I always think if you want to be the perennial bachelor, just you have to make it through to the next football season. It's the only way, because it doesn't matter what people are saying. Let's be honest. It's like, can I justify it to myself without needing to say anything, you know? There's some things where it doesn't have to be okay. It doesn't need to be the right thing to do. But as long as you've justified it to yourself and you can go to bed at night and get your 6 to 8 hours sleep without having sort of a near cardiac arrest or any sort of hypertension about it, it's fine. And I've made it through to another football season, you know? I don't have time to do all these other, to meet people. Who's got the time? You know, on the weekend, in the week it's work, and on the weekend there's just so much football, and then it's the NFL, and it's like, yo, there's so much going on, you know? And then you can just justify it, and that's, thank goodness, what I've done. I've made it to another football season. If you're a bachelor, shout out to you, brother. I don't know how ladies do it, but as a man, good for you, man. You've made it. You've made it to another season. The other thing is this. Here's what I don't get. You know how there's all these like enlightened men in the world, or so-called enlightened. Like, I don't know anything. Like, I don't see myself as enlightened. So there's all like these people like, oh, there's so much more. There's art and there's music. It's like, yes, we know that. We know that. You're not the only person to have, you know, you're not the only person who knows who Monet, right? You don't know, you're not the only person who knows what a Manet is, you know? We know what an orchestra is. We know Swan Lake in Austria is the dream if you want to watch the highest level of art. Like, we know these things. You're not special. You're not, there's nothing worse than people that think, no, you know what? There's more than football. My thing is, what the hell do mediocre, I'm not talking about, like, there are men that are unbelievably attractive to women, so their whole weekend's just filled up meeting chicks, you know? But what does the standard guy with a job who's making upper middle class money, what are you doing on the weekend if you don't watch football? And you aren't that attractive to women, like, you're not physically attractive. What are you doing on the weekend? Like, what is that guy doing? How do people fill their time if they don't watch the English Premier League? I just don't get what most of you are doing. Like, if you're not into football, I mean, I don't know what you're doing. Like, I don't watch movies, right? For instance, like, you want to give me a nightmare? Invite me to like the cinema. I just think, what a waste of time. In fact, watching movies nowadays, I just like, no, 2 hours, 2 hours of that, 3 hours. No, thank you. Spider-Man 15 or whatever they're on. No chance. No chance. Like, I'm not doing it. You know. Now, you get me to a play. Like, I like that. I like going to the theater. But it's got to be high end, you know, as well. I want, like, thespians. I don't want to go to my cousin's play. What am I doing? I've also got stuff to do. But as a single man, Chief, what are you doing? What are you doing on the weekend? What are you doing? If you're into cigars, like how much can that be a lifestyle? Are people going out like swapping cigars? Like going to cigar lounges, you know? I don't know where you live in the world, but is that what people are doing? Like what else are people doing? There's only so many concerts. There's only so many movies. Like how many movies are at a cinema, you know? How much Netflix is there? Like I don't know. I don't have Netflix. I don't know. I'm going to get Netflix for... I'm not actually going to get Netflix because I use somebody else's Netflix for the NFL. And yeah, like what are you doing? If you've got kids and a wife, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about single men between the ages of 18 and 45, right? If you're single between the age, what are you doing on the weekend if you're not watching football? It's absolutely crazy to me. It's crazy to me. Like, I don't know what... How do you fill your weekend? Rugby, cricket, or like whatever. You've got to be into sport, you know? If you're not, what are you doing? What are you doing? Because I also know other stuff exists. And I'm relatively speaking... Are people just watching like Fox News or like CNN the way I watch the Premier League? You know, like I follow the Premier League in the week. Are they fully engaged in like what DW News, if you're in South Africa, News 24? Like, is that what people are doing? Are they following political discourse globally, you know, geopolitics and rooting for, I don't know, Iran or whatever, you know, like, are you going, Straits of Hormuz Tuesday night? You know, you can't do it unless you've done it on a cold night in the Straits of Hormuz kind of thing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm one-dimensional. Who knows what's going on? Anyway, we're going to talk Rashford and Ben Stokes. I don't know if I've talked about it before, but I mean, there was another classic Marcus Rashford line this week, and I just thought to myself, this guy's painful. We're going to talk some Liverpool, Iriola, Man City. We'll talk some Arsenal. I watched Chelsea tonight. I had three meetings cancelled today. Incredible, by the way. Yeah, just incredible. Incredible that people, like last minute as well, like, oh, no, sorry. It's like, oh, yeah, no worries. I've only spent 2 weeks preparing for this. Anyway, so I watched basically 60 minutes of Chelsea. hysterical. We'll talk about that. And then we'll wrap up with Man United. They lost 2-0 to Hull. I'll give my thoughts on the whole situation there. Not the Hull situation, the whole situation. Although the Hull's... What the hell is going on, they were saying on the weekend. Mauled by the Tigers. You're getting mauled by the Tigers. A bit zesty of a celebration there. By the way, nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying, I'm just saying it does look quite zesty when you're doing it. If you haven't seen it, go and Google or YouTube or on the X machine. Mauled by the Tigers celebration Hull. It looks a bit zesty when they're doing it. but as a crowd, it's fine. I think when they zoom in on one man doing it, it looks quite zesty, which is fine. Like, whatever. Men can, you know, drink a spritzer. It's okay. I'm fine with that. It's fine. I'm not judging it or whatever. Maybe I am inside and I'm not going to say I am. But, you know, if a guy orders a spritzer, you're like, oh, my goodness, one of these guys. You are. Come on, be honest. You are a little bit like that. Like, let's say it's couples, right? If you're like in couples and like, unless it's like they ordering daiquiris together kind of thing. But if a guy orders like, I don't know, a spritzer or like a wine and soda or something like that, you know, you're like, okay. It's like, can I have a spritzer? Oh my goodness. Or if a man orders a continental breakfast, I'm like, interesting. That's me anyway. I'm just letting into my heart. I'm letting into my heart. All right, let's get into the show. It's a sports show after all. MKT Inspires, MKT at the MKT Show. Otherwise, remember, you can leave a comment on Spotify or wherever you listen. I still can't figure out Apple Podcasts, by the way. Don't even get me started. Don't even get me started. Apple Podcasts. What a mess. What a gemors that is. What a groot gemors trying to plug into Apple Podcasts. And I pay somebody to do that, by the way. Somebody who has a multi-million euro company, I pay them to do that. And they can't figure it out. So it's either Apple Podcasts or them or the previous company I had in South Africa. It can't be them. They all, like, we don't know. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, good luck out there. Good luck out there. MKT Inspires, social media. Slide in the DMs if you'd like to have your question answered on the show. MKT Show, the MKT Show, or MKT Inspires, either one. MKT at the MKT Show is the electronic mail for those of you that were born in 1856 and still use emails. All right, let's get into the show. You know, I was reading something before the Premier League week started, and I saw something from Marcus Rashford. And if you're not a cricket fan, Ben Stokes, who's the former England captain, just retired. But in my lifetime, I don't think I've encountered two people who have made tens of millions of pounds doing a dream job who have been more miserable. Like, Marcus Rashford seems miserable all the time. Now, money doesn't solve human problems. Like, if you've got like a depression problem, or you were abused as a child, I mean, we saw the Dele Alli thing. I'm not talking about those societal anomalies where it's just like, God, that is devastating. Like that is, like, the Dele Alli thing is just, it's cruel beyond anything. Like, you wouldn't wish what happened to Dele Alli on your worst enemy, right? Like, there's nobody who's relatively human who could go, yeah, no matter how much I hate you. And by the way, it's okay to hate people. I know people say it's, some people say having hate in your heart is like chain smoking. You know, it's like only you have it and the other person's moving on. I think it can be useful. But Dele Alli, okay, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Marcus Rashford, who is just miserable all the time. And I don't know how, like, people feel about this, but I have a strong position on millionaires that tell everyone how hard their life is. What are you talking about? And from what I understand, it's not like Marcus Rashford was born rich, right? So I'm not saying he's a bad guy. He's clearly MBE, using his influence to feed the kids, and that's great. But he said last week, he's like, you know, I just want to play football without being talked about. It's like, Marcus, what are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about? The whole reason you make £300,000 a week is the media. It's us, by the way. It's the fans. The reason you make £300,000, because if you don't want to be talked about, sacrifice the money and go and play for your local pub team and have a job as a postman. There's nothing wrong with being a postman, by the way. I'm not denigrating postmen. I'm saying you don't have to be a professional footballer. Like, these woe is me. Like, Ben Stokes, who was the England captain, cricket, and just miserable about everything. Like, Ben Stokes is just miserable about everything that happened to him. By the way, that he brought onto himself. And it's just so painful when we have millionaires trying to tell us how miserable their lives are. I was like, Marcus, what do you mean you want to play football without people talking about you? Dude, first of all, you play for Manchester United, right? What are you talking about? Like, if you don't perform at Manchester United, you are going to be talked about. I mean, people were criticizing Cristiano Ronaldo when he scored 17 goals. He came back and he was at the age of, how old was he? 37, and he was the best player at Man United. In fact, Rashford and co, the players at Man United, were it seems like they revolted against Ronaldo for trying to lift their standard. So if you're at Man United, you are naturally going to be criticized. But God, he's miserable. He earns £300,000 a week. Never in the history of anything has there been two more miserable sods than Ben Stokes and Marcus Rashford. And I think, I don't think it's okay that nobody addresses that. Like, it's not okay. It's not okay. And then people go with this line, right? What about their mental health? I go, okay, no, that's a very, very good point. Like, football is stressful. Well, you know what else is stressful? Being the CFO and the CEO of a company. You know what you do with a CEO when he's stressed? You fire him or he must resign. Like this is not some God-given job, right? Now, there's some fiduciary responsibilities of football clubs to look after these players, because if you think about it, this is all these people have ever done. They don't really have any other life skills, mostly. You know, not everybody's Arjen Robben and doing their masters, or Vincent Kompany doing their masters while they're playing. Like, very few people are doing their masters in life. Forget about being a professional footballer. Arjen Robben's got his masters in like IT or something. Isn't that insane? Who was it? Abu Diaby, I think, was an aeronautical engineer while he was playing for Arsenal. I mean, he barely played. He was always in hospital, probably had lots of time to study. But still, like, imagine that, you know. Not everybody's that. So there is a sort of fiduciary kind of duty of care that the clubs have to the players to help them transition. You know, we've seen the disaster stories, Lee Henry, Paul Gascoigne, just all of these guys, once they leave football, it's tough. But it's like, sorry, there's lots of people who get fired all the time, you know. Like, if you're an engineer and you study engineering at varsity and you get fired when you're 37 because your company was scamming people and they just shut down out of nowhere, nobody's there for you. Nobody says anything. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong. I'm saying these footballers aren't special when their lives are hard after they retire. Like, people struggle with retirement all the time at 65, by the way. You're 35 when you retire as a footballer. For the love of Christ. So I'm not okay with it. I'm not okay with letting millionaires whinge. I'm sorry. Like, I am not okay with that. And if anything, you're not going to find anybody who defends and venerates sportsmen and women like I do. I'm the guy who people probably go, ugh, this guy's got like a weird fascination or a weird love or a weird defense for people who get paid millions of dollars, pounds, euros to play a children's game, right? So I'm the guy who should be going, give Marcus Rashford a break. But God, he's miserable. He is so miserable. So I wanted to talk about him. And when Ben Stokes retired, I thought, thank God. Thank God. Like, you are so miserable considering what an awesome job you've got, right? And stop telling me how much pressure you've got. That's what the money is for. You don't, and also you chose to be a footballer and the captain of England cricket. So stop expecting me to have a pity party for you. I'm not doing it. Like, I love sportsmen. In fact, I love sport more than anything. I want to be honest. So I love it. I love sportsmen. I love what they do. I love the storylines they create. Even if I don't like the sportsmen, I love them. I admire them. Like, I put them on a pedestal. But when they're miserable, I'm like, okay, I'm out. Like, I'm out. You don't get to do something incredible and be some of the most handsomely rewarded human beings in the history of mankind, right? And still be miserable. No, come on. Come on. Like, I'm of the mind that, you know, to whom much is given, much is expected. And it should be, right? It's the correct way for us. Because we're in a social contract, right? Fans and sportsmen are in a social contract. Like, okay, we're over here, you're over there. We sort of understand where your domain ends and mine begins, and you understand where mine ends and yours begins. Like, it's sort of unspoken, right? And we, like, God, these guys get paid lots of money. But it's like, yeah, you know, we get it. We like, if you've played football with your mates in the park, like their first touch is like something you could only dream about. They're like, fine, you know. So we're almost no fan, really, like proper football fan, it really cares how much Marcus Rashford earns. It's when you start to become a sulky, wet blanket, we start to go, come on, pal. Like these footballers, trust me, I played at academy and under 23 level. You don't do anything. You don't do anything from applying to for a passport, for a visa. A lot of these guys don't even know how to apply for a visa or a passport or like where to buy the simplest things that you and I have to do in the shops. The most footballers discover that when they resign, when they retire or whatever. So Rashford, get him out of Man United, because it seems like agony for him. It just seems like agony for him to be at Man United. Just sell him to Everton or to Blackburn, you know. Because let me tell you something, Marcus, you go to Blackburn, nobody's talking about you. Don't worry about it. And then you're playing football. And as you say, you'll get your wish. What is the old adage? Be careful what you wish for, because you might just get it. Let me know your thoughts. I hate miserable sportsmen. I hate it. I hate miserable sportsmen. I'm not talking about... real depression is less than 2% of the world, right? That's measured. I'm talking about just miserable sods. I'm not talking about people that are clinically depressed. Like if you've got clinical depression and you are addicted to drugs, like that's a whole different world. And by the way, a societal anomaly. We must also, let's stop. Can we stop just saying everybody's depressed? It's like, no, you've had a bad day. It doesn't make you depressed. You've had a bad week. Melancholy doesn't make you depressed. Stop. By the way, we need to stop giving people a pass in general. Of like, oh, I was so depressed. You hear people are just they just throw it around. I was just so depressed last week. Like, no, you weren't depressed. You had a fight with your boyfriend or your girlfriend. Like, you had a bad week. You're under pressure at work. You know, you maybe had a fight with your mother, and it's been 3 weeks. You're not depressed. You're going through a phase of melancholy. It's a week. It's 2 weeks. You're not depressed. Stop. Next time your friend says that, I say, no, don't say that. There's actually depressed people. Like 2% of the world is actually depressed, and getting out of bed is like Marcus Rashford playing football for them. Just the worst thing in the world. Like undoable. It's excruciatingly painful. Marcus Rashford just can't bring himself to play for Man United. You got to feel for the guy. I mean, he only earns £300,000 a week. Thank God Ben Stokes has gone, and I think Marcus Rashford is going to be gone pretty soon. We can all move on from that. Let me know your thoughts. MKT inspires. Miserable sports stars. Just wanted to start off with that. I read that article, Marcus Rashford. I wanted to throw up in my mouth of him saying, I think it was because Jamie Carragher said something about him and he commented on social media. I just want to play football without, wanted to throw up in my mouth. MKT inspires. What are your thoughts? Listen, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some people out there feel there's space for people like Marcus Rashford. Sure. And Anthony Martial, when they asked him, why don't you smile more? He said, I'm a footballer, not an actor. I quite enjoyed that response. All right, let's move on to Liverpool. You know, I was watching, cracking game of the weekend, Liverpool against Newcastle. 96th minute penalty. Lewis Hall, who I thought was man of the match, and he conceded that penalty. And it is what it is, 2-2, you know, Newcastle. I thought they played really well. But I was watching the game and I was thinking to myself, what's going on at Liverpool? And, you know, so I've spent the last 4 and a bit months in this last week, something else has come up in my work life. And a friend of mine brought me in. Let me just put it this way. A friend of mine brought me in on a project which was falling apart for multiple reasons. And not her fault, but she had a bit too much on her plate and some of the actors weren't good actors. So you just need, essentially, you need a troubleshooter, right? And I'm troubleshooting because it's a space I'm comfortable with, and I've sort of worked in production for a long time and worked with customer this particular type of customer over the years. So myself and this lady have worked together on multiple projects, but in particular, she had taken on this project on her own and it's just spinning out of control. And her and I have contrasting personalities, so it kind of works when it's both of us, and she'd kind of found somebody else to play my role, and yeah, let's just say it didn't work out. Anyway, so she brought me into troubleshoot because it's not even that I'm good at the technical side of... I'm actually not a very good project manager, if I'm being completely honest. Like, that's not really where my strengths lie. I'm quite good at seeing BS, number one, but also just like being clinical about calling it out. Because one thing I've realized with a lot of people is people are smart, man. People are smart. But the one thing people struggle with, and it's, call it what you will, it's a strength of mine, is I'm very good at confrontation early as well. Like I don't need people to like me. And I'm not saying that to sound cool. It's just always a trait I've had. Now, I don't know if it's because of the ego I've got or whatever it is. To be honest, I think it's a bit of my dad. Like, my father is... I don't know how to describe him. He's an extremely unique man, which is why I think his line of work was good for him, because he's not... he really didn't suffer fools. But I think there's a bit of that in me. And I thought to myself, you know... She phoned me for a reason. And by the way, she phoned me at like 3 a.m. one day. Anyway, I digress. And I thought, why did she bring me in for this job? Is kind of what I was thinking a little bit. But I'm starting to understand, especially with what happened today. And I thought, yeah, it's actually because I don't need people to like me. When I see it, I'm going to call it. And I'm very comfortable being uncomfortable. If you think about your own life and think about other people, I think a lot of people are just uncomfortable being uncomfortable. I am not. Like, if we're going to live there, I'll wait. I can sit in silence for 5 minutes while you think about your answer. I don't need to look away. I don't need to go. Like, I don't need for us to break. Like, cool, take your time. I'm not going anywhere. You know? And in fact, the issue's not going anywhere. So I'm going to sit right here while you think of your excuse or whatever you're doing over there, pretending like you're actually mulling it over. Or you've got a solution, or you've even tried. And I was thinking about the Liverpool situation. I was watching Liverpool on the weekend, and I've been listening to Iriola's press conferences. And I thought, you know, troubleshooting's not for everybody. You know, when Jurgen Klopp came in to Liverpool, I remember him. You remember Mamadou Sakho, one of the most caricature, ridiculous-looking humans? He had the peroxided mohawk. And he's just like, he's a bit of a clown, right? And there was a social media video quite early of Mamadou Sakho being late for something. And he had a selfie video with Jurgen Klopp talking about him being late. And I'll never forget Jurgen Klopp's face in that video. And I thought, oh, this guy's gone. And guess what? He was gone like a week later. He didn't start that in Jurgen Klopp's, I think, first season or whatever it was. Like, boom, you're gone. And I thought, oh, this guy means business. Like, Jurgen Klopp's got the I'm the fun guy. I was like, oh, no. This is a man that means business. This is after Brendan Rodgers and just a debacle, right? Like, Liverpool had been a debacle since the 80s. Let's just be honest. Jurgen came in, and Jurgen does not care what you think about him. And you need that sort of exaggerated self-worth. Some people might call it ego, but I think when you're at Jurgen's level, it's not an ego. I think it's an exaggerated self-worth, right, that understands what has to be done, and nobody's going to get in the way of that, despite how it makes them feel towards you, which is a very, very rare trait. Because some of you may be sitting there and going, do you know what? The CFO, like, or the COO or the CEO at work, my boss, it's like, yes, they are so, they're so uncomfortable as a person. They just, but deep down inside of you, like if they're honest, consistent, you do think to yourself, I kind of admire that. Because not only are they good at what they do, not only do they work hard, but they're also going to call it out. And when you're that, you can call it out, because when somebody's putting in the mileage, right, and has done the work and has earned the role and has the technical and, you know, soft skills, you're like, okay, what can you do? Even if they're a bloody miserable, tough sod, right? And I thought, Andoni Areola is not the guy. And the reason he has to troubleshoot it is it clearly went off the rails with Arne Slot. And they actually need a Mourinho, Jurgen Klopp type to come in. They don't need somebody to come and win now. In fact, the Areola, I want to play good football guy, is probably the last person that they need. They've just spent £450 million with Isak and Wirtz and Frimpong, and that's not working. Like, they've completely changed the profile of the squad from what it was under Jurgen, and now they're trying to sort of mesh the old with the new, and then there's complaints about it's not like Jurgen Klopp. And now Areola kind of has to face the backlash, which is actually meant for Arne Slot. And they've been so slow in this transfer window, because last transfer window they spent so much on the Arne Slot project. What they need is a project manager, because there are some people. I mean, you were watching that performance by Liverpool. Gravenberg, I thought Alexander Isak, I thought Wirtz, I thought Frimpong. The centre-backs were just deplorable. Kirkes, what is going on there? And you're watching it and you think, this needs Mourinho. This needs the players to hear some hard truths. Virgil van Dijk, what is going on, pal? All over the place. I think van Dijk's going to have a shocking season, because the athleticism's fallen off. I watched Elanga run by him, not for the goal, but just in general. And Virgil usually, I mean, part of his thing is that. Part of his aura is, I'm 6'5", but I'm as quick as anybody in the league over 10 yards. He's lost that. And the thing at that level is, you only need to fall off 5%. You don't need to fall off 50%. 5% takes you from great to good, and good is Everton, right? Great is Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal. So I'm a little bit worried for Liverpool, in the sense that Areola is the wrong person. And I think Mr. Nice Guy Andoni Areola, this could really go off the rails, because the players from the previous era aren't performing, and they are a bit handcuffed in the spending, because they just spent nearly $500 million last season. The only guy who's performed is Ekitike. He's going to be back in January. He's the only guy who's sort of shown some personality. Alexander Isak is coming off a serious injury. 90% of Isak's game is explosive power. He's a terrific finisher, but explosive power. Do you remember when Chelsea bought Fernando Torres and he was having those hamstring injuries? I think Jamie Carragher or somebody has spoken about, they knew in training that Torres had lost that explosive power. I don't see that explosive power from Alexander Isak. You remember at Newcastle, he was just bursting past people. And he's not like Thierry Henry. With Isak, it's knock it past you, and then he's got a silky finish. Well, if he doesn't have the knock it past you, like Fernando Torres didn't have at Chelsea, it's 50% of the deal. It's 50% of the deal. Is Areola going to be able to go to Isak and tell him, no, brother? I don't think so. Because he's not a troubleshooter. A guy like Areola wants to come in maybe where Jurgen Klopp left off. Right? You've still got the feel-good factor. You've still got Mo Salah kind of at the top, but, you know, he wants to be that guy. He doesn't want to be this guy. Just look at the style of football he wants to play. So if I'm a Liverpool fan, I don't know. Horses for courses, and you got the wrong one. I like Areola because I like the football. I love on the front football. But is he the guy for now? I don't think so. And I think I've got my red flag on Liverpool. And by the way, just another thing I was thinking about it as well was, this is what Liverpool are, by the way. Like, you know, Liverpool fans seem to, and it's a coping mechanism for all of us, we sort of forget the trauma and the ugly part. But if you're honest with yourself, Liverpool are the fifth club, debated with Tottenham, but they're the fifth or the sixth club. Let's just be honest. They are. Like it's, you know, it's Chelsea, it's Man City, it's Arsenal, it's Man United, and then Liverpool, fifth, sixth, right? But them and Tottenham, like, you decide. In the big six, Jurgen Klopp was the aberration, not the rule. So could Liverpool also just, are they just reverting to what they were? And not what they were, what they actually are, which is a lovely establishment, arguably the best fans in world football, but not really a modern day winning institution. Back in the day, yeah, no, juggernaut, 80s, 90s, well, 70s, 80s, 60s, Liverpool, no doubt. But nobody confuses Chelsea and Liverpool in the modern day, right? Nobody's going to confuse the two. No, nobody's confusing Man City. Nobody's confusing Fergie's Man United with Liverpool. Two titles in 30 years does not make you Real Madrid. And I'm afraid you are what you are, right? It's going to be interesting. I think it's Mayday. My red flag team for the season is Liverpool. Big time. Especially watching the performance. And I thought, how much can he really improve it? That Kirke is his left back. They're invested. Robertson's gone now, right? Like, they're invested. Connor Bradley's coming back, but and he is a good player. But how much better is he than Frimpong? And he's a good player. But then what do you do at centre-back? Jacque, okay, let's find out. You're 19 years old. Centre-backs mature at 28. The Virgil situation, nobody wants to talk about. Everybody wants to ignore that. Nobody wants to talk about that. It's over. The Virgil thing's over. I watched it on the weekend. It's over, guys. Osula was just striding past him. Because half of the deal with Virgil, he's a good defender one-on-one, but half of the deal, 50% of the deal, is what makes him a good defender one-on-one, is he could go stride for stride with anybody on the turn, right? So for Virgil, he didn't need to be Maldini or John Terry, where I'm always in the right place. There's no need. I mean, Maldini was unique. Maldini was a Virgil van Dijk level athlete, and he was in the right place 24/7. But he didn't need to be that. Because for Virgil, he could give you a yard or two. Don't you worry, I'm going to get there. And I'm 6'5", so I'm going to get between you and the ball. Forget it. There's no striker in the world who could live with Virgil for sort of 3 or 4 years at his peak. But it's over. And is Iriola going to have that conversation with him? Horses for courses. I'm not sure he's a troubleshooter. I think he's more of a consultant. You know, consultants just want to do the fun stuff. They don't want to deal with firing people, calling people out. Hey, listen, there's some money missing here, and you said this, and you know. If you're a Liverpool fan, MKT Inspires, what are your thoughts on what you watched on the weekend, and what are you thinking with Iriola? How are you feeling about it? MKT Inspires, social media, let me know. MKT Inspires. Remember, you can leave questions on Spotify, is probably the easiest one, but wherever you listen to the podcast, I've got a plugin now, besides Apple Podcasts. The plugin can't pull from Apple Podcasts, so I get all the questions. Let's move on to Man City. I thought it was, it's interesting. They won, obviously. Last minute, great comeback. It's what great teams do. Bournemouth fell apart. Good start for Bournemouth. But Man City, they got a lot of champion players. But I think also Arsenal went through this. Liverpool are going through it post Jurgen. Chelsea went through this post Mourinho. And the Arsenal, Man United went through it. You know, great is an overused word. There's very few great of anything. There's very few great boyfriends, wives, CEOs, CFOs, project managers, salespeople. like truly great, like 1%? Is it like great? We should rein the word generational and great in. Like, there may only be one great manager in the Premier League at a time. Right? We had Mourinho and Pep. They were in La Liga together. All right, that's two great managers, right? Alex Ferguson, Carlo Ancelotti, they were in the Premier League together. But it's very rare that you've got like if you look at the Pep era, Jurgen Klopp, I mean, I'll leave that to people. I wouldn't put him in the great conversation. Terrific, very, very good, yes. But in the Pep era, what other great managers were in the league? Like, think about it. There wasn't really. There isn't. It's very, very difficult to have two great. Arsene Wenger, Sir Alex Ferguson, two great managers. But so great, my point is, great is so rare. People just think, oh, Pep Guardiola, it's Man City, we'll just replace him. Don't worry about it. Well, go and ask Man United fans what happened post-Fergie. Go and ask Arsenal fans what happened post-Arsene Wenger. Go and ask Chelsea fans. Still singing Jose Mourinho's name, by the way. Now, today. Irreplaceable. And I think Man City, they have, largely speaking, got it right. From Mark Hughes to Mancini, from Mancini to Pellegrini handing over to Pep Guardiola. They've generally, as the club status has evolved, so has the sophistication of the manager, right? And you see it with organizations all the time. I think if you're in South Africa currently, the Comrades Marathon and just running events in general, but Comrades Marathon are a good example, where the organization and what the product is has outgrown the management, right? The capability of the management. So the Comrades Marathon is such a beast, but the management is still amateur. So I think Man City did a great job of, the bigger and better we got, the more sophisticated the person in charge has to be. And I thought they did that really well. Well, they're going to learn. There's a tipping point for everything. And they have not made a mistake. Be honest, since Mark Hughes, they have not made a mistake. Well, now I think it's going to get interesting. Because once you're at the top of the mountain, like, who else can replace Pep Guardiola in this generation? There isn't really one. There really isn't. There isn't, like, in the Premier League right now, there's not a single very good manager. Like, Mikel Arteta is fine, you know. He's fine. He's a really, really promising guy. But you're not talking about Jose Mourinho here. He hasn't gone back to back. He hasn't done a sort of league and FA Cup. He hasn't even done league and FA Cup double. Like, that separates you. Like, Arsene Wenger was league and FA. I mean, how many times did he win the FA Cup? I think 7 times or something ridiculous, Arsene Wenger. Alex Ferguson, 13 titles, treble. Yeah. Like, this is what makes you great. I'm not talking one league title. It's Claudio Ranieri, right? Mikel Arteta and Claudio Ranieri have the same legacy in the Premier League. If we're gonna have a cold conversation about it. Jose Mourinho has 3 titles. 3. You're starting to get it. Like, that's the baseline for great, right? I don't see a great manager in the Premier League right now. There's not a single great man. In fact, I would argue, I don't see, outside of Hansi Flick, there's not a great manager in world football right now. Pep's said he's put it on ice. And don't give me Luis Enrique. Do not give me PSG. Do not give me that. That's Farmers League, and they do nothing until the Champions League. I'm talking about truly great. Like you're at Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, and you're delivering with those expectations. Nobody thinks Luis Enrique. There's no way people think Luis Enrique is a great manager. You can't be a football fan and think that. You can't. Like, they have no... People hate Man City for the corruption, right, that they presume is happening, allegedly. PSG are the most filthy, disgusting. I mean, what the Qataris did to pay for the... World Cup and ruin French football. I mean, Platini can't even come back to football. There is no FFP there. Like, I've tried to read the rules in French football. I don't know how European football's captured by them, right? Like, there's nothing they can do. So there isn't really great going around. And Man City are going to learn the difference between potential and greatness, because they haven't had this dilemma. The cycle has run fully all the way around, and it's like, now what? I thought Man City was shocking. Like, shocking. And when you're going to get rid of Rodri, who's the best midfielder in the world right now, what did you think was going to happen? It's something I don't understand about football minds today in general. You know, playing in the center circle in football is so rare, because I saw a clip or an interview with Frank Lampard the other day, and they were asking him, is there a midfielder in the Premier League that reminds you of yourself? And he said, no. And he said, I don't mean to be arrogant, but there isn't anybody who can play in the middle and then run into the other box and score goals. There isn't a single footballer like that. Not one. No, it doesn't exist, right? Everybody plays number 6 or number 10. There's no number 8 left in football. Like, proper Michael Essien, Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard, you know, like going coast to coast, like box to box. Like young Toni Kroos before he settled in at Real Madrid. Goretzka is that style. By the way, he signed for Aston Villa. I'm excited. I hope he can not have the injuries, because he's a proper number 8. He operates between the boxes. Like, that's exciting. I'm excited to see somebody with that kind of engine and mindset. He wants to travel with the ball, and he wants to travel coast to coast. He's got the engine. So I'm really excited to see a proper number 8. But Rodri operates and controls the middle of the field. It's very rare. Like, Rodri is actually a number 6, number 8 hybrid. He's got no interest in going beyond that, but in the middle of the field, Rodri actually controls the game, like Xavi Hernandez used to do. Like, actually, I'm going to stand in the middle of the field and direct the traffic between defense. You know, I'm going to be the traffic manager. And you've got the best one in the world. I mean, you saw Rodri at the World Cup with not a very talented team, but it's just like, this guy is just controlling the midfield with Brian Ruiz, right? Brian Ruiz is another number 8, by the way, who I love. But I thought to myself, how are Man City waiting this late, knowing Rodri wants to move? Well, what do you think? Elliot Anderson's going to replace. I mean, Elliot Anderson's a number 6, right? An athletic number 6. Well, what did you think is going to happen? And also, it's very different, right? Like, even Declan Rice's whole thing is he's going to physically dominate between the number 6 and number 8 position. But he's a bit of a donkey with the ball at his feet. Like, Rodri is a brilliant playmaker. Like, Declan Rice doesn't control the tempo, which is why they actually bought Zubimendi. And I don't know why that's not working, right? But Declan Rice is just, his anticipation, his one-on-one challenging, and he makes the kitchen hot, Declan Rice, because he puts the pressure on you and he gets rid of it quickly. Like, Declan Rice is world class. I'm not sort of diminishing what he does, but he doesn't have the sophisticated layer that Rodri does. The ability to not get involved, like, be so technically adept that you're not going to get involved in the physical stuff. Give me the ball, and I already know where it needs to go 3 passes ahead. So when it gets to me, you're not touching me, which is why you can't get a kick on Rodri. It's crazy. And Man City thought, we'll get Elliot Anderson to replace him. And I thought it was quite telling. Nico Gonzalez looks like he's on his way to Newcastle. But I thought they had Matias Nunes, Nico Gonzalez on the bench, and Mark Guehi started central midfield. So I don't know if that's like a message from Maresca to the board going, no, I need Enzo Fernandez. Or he clearly is not happy with the other options, which is why Nico Gonzalez is gone. I imagine that money will go to Enzo Fernandez, who's at Chelsea. So I thought to myself, but it didn't look right. Not so much the result. They didn't look elite. Like Arsenal looked... They look proper. I'll talk about Arsenal in a bit. But you like, as a football fan, sometimes you don't need to break it all down. Like, you can see when it looks proper. It didn't look proper. And as a Chelsea fan, my biggest thing about Enzo Maresca was his tactical naivety. In fact, it's a bit of vibes. It didn't feel like he had a playing pattern or a way of playing. He just, let's put the players out there in a shape and hope their talent does the rest. Not in modern day football. Not in modern football. And you know what it is about Maresca that really frustrated me at Chelsea? It's not like the team was scoring bundles of goals, and the defense wasn't very good. Like, at the top level, you've got to be one or the other. Either you score, like, you're flooding forward and it's 4-3 all the time, right? Or it's 2-0, like, you're a 1-0, 2-0 team. Chelsea were neither. They were lose 2-1 all the time, or like, you know. This is under Maresca. Forget what happened after Maresca. So I think the decision was confusing for me, but I think Man City are about to learn a lesson. Good is not great. Good is not great. It just didn't look proper. MKT and Spice, let me know your thoughts. Man City, where are they finishing in the league? What are your thoughts on what you saw in the first weekend from them? What are your thoughts on Enzo Maresca? MKT Inspires on the socials. Instagram's the best. By the way, if you've got time, give the show a rating. I was checking somewhere and the show's rating is like a 4.9. I'm like, who is the terrorist, the disgusting person who didn't give the show a 5? I've always said, give the show a 5 or don't listen. You know what I mean? I want you to love this show or to hate it. So it should be a 5. I don't want constructive feedback. I want ridiculous praise or I hate this guy. You know what I mean? I hate this guy. I hate this show. Why am I even listening? Burn your phone. Like, I hate what I've just listened to so much. I have to burn my phone. Even though I don't have insurance, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I don't have an alarm. So it's going to be a nightmare waking up on Monday. Like, that's what I want. Burn your phone or give the show a 5-star rating. So, yeah, wherever you listen to the podcast, please give us a rating and leave a comment. Leave a comment, you know, whatever it may be. By the way, 5 stars, and maybe you're like, I hate the show, but, you know, got to support a brother. Just a quick word on Arsenal. I mean, they just humiliated Coventry. And I was talking about it now, just watching Arsenal. They're going to win the league because there's nobody else. I mean, they are very good, but there is a big part of them cruising the league this year is there's nobody else. And that's not their fault. They've built it correctly over the last 6 years through Mikel Arteta, patience, brilliant recruiting, and sticking to their guns. No pun intended, but they play the most. It's still Arsenal play the most painful, dreary defensive football one could ever imagine. Like, Mikel, your players are so good. You got Eberechi Eze basically playing defensive midfield. But anyway, like whatever. It's about winning, right? At this stage. And he won the Premier League. Like, it's one of those things where nobody can tell him anything. He is the Premier League champion. There's nothing anybody can say to Mikel Arteta. But I thought also, it just looked proper. Everybody knows where to be. The defense is super tight. Like Arsenal know what they are. They are George Graham's 1-0 to the Arsenal. We're back at that Arsenal, right? It is 1-0 to the Arsenal. And once Arsenal score first, forget it. Because the one thing they do have, Arsenal, and it looks like Saka, by the way, goodness, has he got his pace back? Like, I don't know what happened to Saka's pace for a while. Remember there was a stage where everything was cut inside, but I watched Bukayo Saka going down the outside this weekend and I thought, well, that's exciting. Because for the last 2 seasons, he wasn't doing that. And I thought, oh, he's lost the pace, but you know what? He's such a terrific technical player and he's such a good passer and crosser of the ball that even if he cuts inside, he makes good decisions, Saka. He's not selfish. Like, he's not cutting inside to shoot. He's cutting inside. He's got his head up. He's going to pass it. He's going to make the right call. And he's a team player. And the one thing I love about Saka, he tracks back. So you get tremendous output with Saka and he tracks back. That was the one thing about Mo Salah I couldn't stand. Like, Mo Salah is not Arjen Robben. He's not good enough to not track back. But anyway, people say, oh, but what about the goals? I say, oh, well, that's why you've only got one title or two titles, you know. Sadio Mane left and it was never the same. But you get what I'm saying. It just looks proper with Arsenal, right? Everybody knows what's going on. Mikel Arteta has set his stall out to say what the standards are. And you know what, you have to be honest? I think the most important thing that Arteta's done, there are no bad apples in the Arsenal dressing room. Be honest. There are no bad apples in that dressing room. And that's deliberate. That doesn't happen by chance. There is excellence is not a mistake. I mean, Konza's coming. Like, Konza's just, you've never heard anything about him off the field. He's just a consummate professional who's England's centre-back now, along with Mark Guehi. Like he's just... Because Thomas Tuchel is a bastard. And if Tuchel's playing you, Tuchel doesn't care what club you play for. Like, he's looking at the technical aspects of football. And the one thing Tuchel does not tolerate is laziness. Like, if you're not serious, Thomas Tuchel is not about that. That's why Kyle Martin-Odoi had to go, right? Like, those types of guys had to go. It does not work under Thomas Tuchel. Tuchel loves him. So Konza, just another one, like a five-star football guy, like all ball, all the time. Go through that Arsenal lineup. There's not a single guy you look at and you think, this guy's got Jadon Sancho vibes or a Marcus Rashford vibe, you know? Like, when was the last thing you heard anything about an Arsenal player off the field? In any capacity. I'm talking about social media, like being a social media guy. It doesn't happen. There isn't a Jack Grealish there, right? There isn't a Jadon Sancho there. Like, there's no Rashford there. There's no I'm fighting with the club guys. And some people might say it's the winning, but it's not like Arsenal have been winning that much. They haven't really. They've got one title. But they feel proper because football clubs run themselves. Like, to be good on the football field, the dressing room runs it. The manager can certainly create the environment and enable the leaders, but largely speaking, if you've got... I mean, one bad apple, especially if he's a good player, can ruin everything. He can ruin everything. So it looks proper at Arsenal. You have to... It pains me. I'm a Chelsea fan, but I watched it and I thought, my God, these guys are good. And they just are together. And, you know, Odegaard... It's just not like the one thing about having Martin Odegaard, right? He's one of the guys who's just a blue chip captain. Like, when you have Martin Odegaard, it's almost like if you've got a good parent or a good teacher, like if you think back, he's not somebody you want to let down. There are just some people who, like, when you had Vincent Kompany, right, as your captain, like you got Vincent Kompany, he doesn't need to yell and scream. You know what I mean? Hey, like, not everybody needs to be Roy Keane. There's some people, the young kids call it aura, but Martin Odegaard just strikes me as the type of guy who's uber serious. And when the top guys like that, I can only imagine how Mikel Arteta is on Odegaard's case. And if Odegaard's taking the coaching and Arteta's intensity, who are you? And because Odegaard's all ball, right? Saka, all ball. Like, think about these guys. The one guy who I was worried about, and I was saying to a friend of mine, Victor Gyökeres was overweight last season. He moved like a cart horse. And overweight, I've told you before, overweight as a sportsman is revolting to me. He was overweight. He was sluggish because he was overweight, because he wasn't there in preseason. Not being fit and being the Arsenal striker just tells me he's not about ball. Well, that's why he's not on the team. That's why Kai Havertz is playing. Like, Mikel Arteta doesn't care. Why do you think they were looking for Vinicius Jr.? They want to get rid of Victor Gyökeres because this guy's not serious. I mean, Calvin Phillips pitched up and was overweight. Pep didn't play him from the first season. Calvin Phillips hasn't seen the Man City change room again. Because at Man City, Kovacic and those guys and Erling Haaland, it doesn't even need to come from the management. They're going to go to the manager and say, this guy, nah. In fact, they might not even go to the manager. They might even go to the guy. Those type of strong dressing rooms So the Gyökeres thing isn't going to work because the players know. The players know. They're going to address that. That's the one thing about dressing rooms. They're going to address that. They're going to go to him or if you know it's a new time, they might not want to upset the guy. They're going to go to the manager and say, this guy's not serious. Like, coach, we appreciate what you're doing. We as a leadership group, Declan Rice, because these are serious guys as well, hey? Like, Declan Rice is a serious guy. Like, you just look at Declan Rice. Married, no nonsense, ball. Self-aware, socially inclined. Like, Martin Odegaard, I think he was the captain of Norway at 19. Like, just listen to that. Norway, this is not Jamaica, right? He's not the captain of Nigeria. He's the captain of Norway, the richest country in Europe, at 19 years old. That's got to tell you what we're talking about. Like, just say that out loud. The men's football captain for Norway at 19. Like, imagine the due diligence they have to do for you to be the captain of Norway at 19 years old. Like, that's proper, right? He's blue chip. And then you got Saka, blue chipper. Declan Rice, blue chipper. Saliba, blue chip. Like, just proper. Just all ball. All ball 24/7. That's your spine. Urien Timber, blue chip. Football guy. Like, all football. Konza, football guy. Calafiori, all ball. Calafiori, all ball. Who's the rotten egg there? There's no rotten eggs. So it looks proper. It looks proper, whether you like it or not. Anybody who can beat the Arsenal this season, I mean, Arsenal don't even need to get better. If they can just repeat last season, they'll win the league. There's no team in the outside of Arsenal who are going to lose less than four games. Everybody's going to lose four or five games in second place, whoever is second. So if Arsenal can win, lose what? What did they lose last season? Three, two. But whatever Arsenal did last season, if they do it again, they're going to win the league by 10 points. Easily. They're going to walk the league. And it's not a fluke. It's not a fluke. I don't care how much you hate the Arsenal, and you know I've got no time for them, but it's proper. And this is how you do it. They've done a mini Man City without the 115 charges. They've been brutal. They've been clinical. And I've always said this. In sports, I have a rule, and Alex Ferguson was the best at this for me in the history of football. You recruit the talent, right? Recruit the talent, but you pay the character. You never give a second contract to a loser. And Arsenal, be honest, he's made some mistakes. He's so quick to move off it. He's made some mistakes, and that's okay. I mean, you never know the person you're signing, because these people, they're not widgets, right? They're human beings. You never really know until you've got them. You can do all the scouting you want until you've got them in-house. You never really, really know. And they've done a terrific job at the Arsenal of avoiding the ego thing as well. I think you have to credit them for avoiding the, oh, well, we paid lots of money for him, so we have to keep him. No, sir. Not Arsenal. Not this Arsenal. Not this Arsenal. They've been brilliant at moving on from the riffraff. And yeah. Hey, listen. Gunners, they should cruise. They should cruise. I want to quickly transition to another side in London, which is the opposite. I was watching Chelsea tonight, and I went on to sort of AI, and I said, how much have Chelsea spent since the Blücher group came in 2022? It's only 4 years ago. it feels like it's been a decade. By the way, this season, 10 years since Chelsea have won the league. So Chelsea are now officially entering Man United territory of no longer creme de la creme. Like, 10 years was too long to be considered creme de la creme. Chelsea are now second tier as a football club. You have to say it, and it's painful, but they are. Like you can't go 10 years. I don't care about the Champions League. Like, The Champions League is the second most difficult trophy, or maybe even third. I think La Liga might be harder. The Bundesliga might be harder to win than the Champions League. I really do think that. But I think the Champions League is second or third. Like, whatever, you can take your pick. I don't think cup competitions are as difficult as winning a league title. The Premier League, whoever wins the Premier League is actually the best team in Europe. This illusion of the Champions League winner is the best team. You can be if you've won a proper league. Like, if you win Real Madrid, win La Liga, and they win the Champions League, they are the best team in Europe. Because La Liga is a joke league, but it's the least jokey of all of them. I think Bundesliga and La Liga, you can kind of fight it out. When Bayern Munich win Bundesliga and the Champions League, then they're the best team in Europe. But I'm not going to give it to Bayern Munich if they just win Bundesliga, you know what I mean? Or Barcelona or Real Madrid when they just win La Liga. That's not good enough. But when you win the Premier League, you are the best team in Europe. Unless one of those other two, like Bundesliga or La Liga teams, go and win the Champions League, which hasn't happened, right? For a wee little bit. So, I was looking at the Chelsea thing. They've spent £1.87 billion in 4 years, which I have no problem with. Like, spend the money. That this is what rich people should do. But the reason I was looking at that, and I thought, you look at how proper Arsenal look. Chelsea have spent that much money, and they still have Robert Sanchez in goal, who is a clown beyond clowns. They've got Romeo Lavia in midfield, and they've got Reece James in the midfield. The midfield is the most important position in football, and you've got a right back and an injury-prone youngster who may or may not be it, and a goalkeeper who should be at Norwich. You've spent £1.8 billion. You haven't addressed the goalkeeper, and you haven't addressed the central midfield, the most important position. And we're 4 years in now, by the way. Yet you're spending money on Morgan Rogers and more attackers and João Pedro, and these things are all fantastic. Fine, Moses Caicedo comes in. Where are the other midfielders? Because if Declan Rice gets injured, you put Zubimendi in, a World Cup winner. You know what I'm saying? Like, Saka comes off, you're putting Eberiche Eze on. Slightly different position. Let's talk about the midfield. I was disgusted watching Chelsea tonight. Like, it truly brought to center stage, like, this has been a disaster. This has truly been a disaster. And the bigger disaster, if you haven't seen, Todd Boehly's leaving because his mate is in trouble with the feds, by the way. Owes, $21 billion is what he's got to find, I think, before the end of the year. I don't really understand the financial game in America. It's so complicated as to the shenanigans he's up to. But it's been the Clear Lake strategy has been the strategy of youngsters to create a farm-like environment. Todd Boehly wanted established stars to mix with the youngsters. If you look at the LA Dodgers, that's how they do it, right? They've got the best development system in baseball, but they buy megastars for the first team and then create the environment like that. Anyway, so Todd Boehly's out, right? Todd Boehly, they're out. So it's going to be the Iqbali and the Iranian guy and his mates. They're going to be running the club, and this is what they've turned it into. Romeo Lavia, Reece James, in the center of midfield after spending £1.8 billion. Revolting. Embarrassing, really. I mean, Sander Berger ran that game tonight. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And if you're a Chelsea fan, God, you got to watch that and go, how did we get here? It also makes you appreciate Roman Abramovich. Because the one thing about Abramovich, ruthless, yes. But the one thing about Abramovich is he let the football people, essentially, I mean, it let him down at the end because I think Marina and Peter Cech were, yeah, just the worst. The probably the worst technical team Chelsea have had. And Chelsea are still paying that price, by the way. But the one thing about Abramovich is he would give you all the rope to hang yourself. He would let the football people do the football thing. Like, how much do you need? How much do you need? Fantastic. And from what I understand is he wasn't shy to go and negotiate himself. Right? Like, you need Eden Hazard? As we found out, you know, Chelsea have had to pay a fine or two. And but Roman Abramovich is happy to go in and see the deal over the line himself. Like, if you really want the player, he'd give it to you. He would give it to you. Like he'd... So for Iqbali and these guys who are bringing in their nerds, their analytics nerds, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it goes with Xabi Alonso, whether they're actually going to just let it be stable and just let the manager manage. Like, if the manager tells you, I need this left back, I need this right back, you might say, our analytics, he says, no, Chief. This is where Roman separated himself. As an owner. And these owners have had 4 years of just letting ChatGPT buy the players. It's crazy. And I watched tonight and I thought the lack of control Chelsea had in midfield. Moises Caicedo is a very, very... I mean, he's one of the best midfielders in the league. But he's not Rodri. He's not that kind of player. Yes, he gives you some impetus. He allows you to press a little bit higher, his athleticism. But he's not Rodri. It's not like you're going to play better football with him. And Chelsea don't really have that because I saw Enzo Fernandez come on. I think Enzo Fernandez is a bit of a donkey, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know what Enzo Fernandez actually does. Like, is he supposed to be like Rodri in the making? Well, he's not technically good enough. And then he's a weak athlete on the ball. He loses the ball a lot, Enzo Fernandez. And he tries to play the I'm cool on the ball, I'm David Silva vibe. Well, the thing about David Silva is his brain was 3 steps ahead of yours. I mean, he was... Has there ever been a better small player in the Premier League? Like, just a tiny guy. And like, in the Premier League, and people could tackle them, by the way. You people were like... I'm talking Michael Essien and these guys. They couldn't get near him. Enzo Fernandez plays like that, except he doesn't actually have the foot skills, the technical skill, and he's not a good athlete. So I think he's a bit of a vibes guy, Enzo Fernandez, with the cool tattoos. I don't get the obsession with him. Like, I look at Ghana at Everton, and I look at Enzo Fernandez. I don't see the difference. I genuinely don't. I'm not sure what Enzo Fernandez is supposed to be. Maybe he's got some personality, and he's just charming, and he's a leader. Like, I don't know. But as a player, I've never seen it. I mean, Benfica did a number on Chelsea there. But I watched him come on tonight. Chelsea didn't play any better football. So I don't know what the plan is. Like, is it Lovia the whole season? Because Caicedo doesn't give you any more control than what Chelsea had tonight. Caicedo's whole thing is, without the ball, I'm going to help you press, and then I'm gonna move it on to the playmakers. Well... that's fine, but you need another guy to direct the traffic. And Reece James is not a central midfielder. He's not. He's a utility guy. He's a defensive midfielder. He's got good anticipation. It gives you physicality in there. But you could see he's out of position. Like, it's not his position. It's not his thing. And you shouldn't, at 1.8 billion, you shouldn't be having a guy playing a secondary role. Like, Reece James should be at right back. What are we doing? Why did Leeds sign the Man City keeper and Chelsea didn't? What happened there? I don't get it. It's extremely worrying. MKT and Spice, let me know your thoughts. Lavia, James, and Sanchez. I mean, I don't mind Lavia. I think he's got lots of potential, but he is what he is now. He's an injury-prone guy who's just maybe not that guy. Like, if you can't play, you're not good enough. The greatest ability is availability. Stop telling me about potential. Potential's interesting to your mother and your side chick, dude. Like, play. You have to play. If you can't play, you have no use. It's crazy. It's crazy to me that the profiling of midfielder at Chelsea at £1.87 billion is still this. And Robert Sanchez, just to get him out of my face. If you're a Chelsea fan, MKT Inspires, let me know. I'm extremely worried. I thought Chelsea might be in the top three, top two of the season. I'm worried. And it's not the manager. I'm just the players. The wrong profile of players. They haven't improved the squad in the correct places. You don't need Morgan Rodgers. You've already got Pedro Neto. And for the love of God, what's Morgan Rodgers going to bring that Chelsea didn't have? Like, Morgan Rodgers is a good player. He's not that much better than Pedro Neto. And they play the same position. He's not. Like, he's just not. So, I don't know. I don't know. I'm officially concerned. I was unofficially worried last season. Some people may remember. Well, I'm officially worried. I'm officially worried as a Chelsea fan. Forget about winning anything this season. Forget it. Forget about, I don't even know about top four now after what I watched today. Worried. Maybe because Tottenham and Man United are just so poor. Maybe you get into the top four because of that. Let me know your thoughts. MK Teen Spies. Your thoughts on Xabi Alonso, Chelsea tonight, and £1.8 billion spent. And getting worse. The squad is worse now than it was 4 years ago when they, or 2 years ago. It's worse now. How's that possible? How do you spend £1.8 billion to get worse? And how do you spend £1.8 billion and not be better? Let's at least leave it at that. You might say, oh, come on. Worse. Well, you came 12th or 10th or whatever Chelsea came last season. That happened. You had, three managers in a season. That happened. All right, let's finish off with Man United. Michael Carrick. Man United lost 2-0 to Hull. What the hell is going on? You know, I was watching it, and when I saw the starting lineup, I thought, this is hilarious. This is hilarious. I was thinking, you know, have you ever met a person, right? Let's say you're newly single and you meet a person and it's like they remind you of your ex and why you broke up with your ex. And I mean, like, you date them though and they're charming and you date for 6 months and it's like they spoil you, you know? But there's a behavior trait that you see in them, that's exactly what your ex was. The reason you broke up with the ex, it's there. It's there. Like, let me give you an example. Maybe it's like one of those, they don't reply for a week and they just always say, oh, it was work or whatever. Like, you know, like for a whole week, they don't even reply to your WhatsApps. And then they say, oh, sorry, I was out of town. Sorry, my mom was sick. Sorry, it was work. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just giving you an example of a trait that might remind you of your ex. But then you think to yourself, but the 5-star spa treatments, you know, at least it buys me that every month. Like, I get 2 5-star. But then, like, month 7, 8, you start to think to yourself, I've got to break up with this guy. It's painful. And then it's painful for you. It's painful for them. And then you're a mess again. And you've got to start all over again. And then you hate yourself more because it's like, but I saw that. I knew it. When it happened, I knew it. And you say to yourself, oh, you're such an idiot. Because you knew where it was going. Because you've seen that behavior before. You left somebody when you had a dog and an apartment and a mortgage with them. You left somebody for that exact reason. And you romanticize the person. And then you hate yourself and you're a mess. And I thought to myself when Hull scored the second goal, I thought, oh, wait, I've seen this before. And I've spoken about it before. It's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but the Brexit version. Michael Carrick is Ollie, but the Brexit version. That's all it is. How do you, as the Manchester United manager, have Benjamin Sesko on the bench and you start a match against Hull with no striker? Please somebody explain that to me. Manchester United Football Club are playing Hull City and they start without a striker. And it's not because they don't have a viable striker option. No, that's not it. They've got Benjamin Sesko on the bench, but he decides to play Bruno Fernandes at false nine. And last year, I was saying this to people and people were saying I was a hater. I said, this is the problem, guys. I saw this exact thing with Ole when he came in and he rescued things. He was playing the poverty football of counterattacking, right? And that's fine. But I said, yes, guys, he doesn't have another gear because he'd played against Man City and he played it against Everton and he played it against Chelsea. And there wasn't an attack mode of like, oh, we want to control this game. And at Manchester United, you're not supposed to lose games 2-0 because you're on the back foot like you were against Hull. Like that first 15 minutes, if you're a United fan, Ollie McBurnley, you've got him looking like prime Duncan Ferguson or Mark Hughes. They're whipping it in. He's all over the defenders. You got Harry Maguire, who's nowhere. The problem, again, is you can't play Harry Maguire in a back four. And you saw why. And this is Ollie McBurnley. What are you going to do when it's Erling Haaland? What are you going to do when it's João Pedro? What are you going to do when it's Ozula at Newcastle 1-1? The poverty football at Man United is, number one, it's offensive to the Man United fans. Because what's the famous United chant? Attack, 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 attack. The United way has always been, Man United doesn't care about philosophy. It's actually never been about good football, even from the Busby Babes. But it's attacking football. You have to attack. It's in the ethos of Man United. And to start with no striker is just beyond imaginable. You can't have two strikers on the bench, right? And not start one. It's crazy. It's just crazy to me that Man United think that's okay. And I tell you what, you made a mistake. I want to see how long it's going to take for them to correct it. They made a mistake. This Michael Carrick thing, we've seen it, guys. He's not elite. He's not elite. The football, this football, where you're managing the game, no. I mean, look at Xabi Alonso tonight. Even if Chelsea were a mess, how did Chelsea play under Xabi Alonso? On the front foot. Your striker needs to be pressing the goalkeeper. I was watching the goalkeeper for Hull standing on the ball for 10 seconds. Bruno's not pressing. Mbeumo's not pressing. Cunha's out of place. Like, why are you playing people out of position at Man United? Doesn't make sense, does it? This is Manchester United. And it's not a funds thing. They're not short of money because they've bought Baleba. I mean, I don't know how many central midfielders they need. Andre Santos, Bruno Fernandes, Baleba now. Like, how many midfielders do you need? It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. They made a mistake again. They went into the Ollie trap. Guys, being a substitute teacher and being a full-time teacher is not the same thing. So here's my thing, right? I'll finish off on this. I think there's a problem at Aston Villa right now. And I'm not sure Unai Emre is going to hang around for this nonsense. We'll get into Aston Villa another time. Is there a reason Unai Emre can't be at Man United by January? Because we can see where this Carrick situation's going, guys. We don't need to prolong this. He can do it and he can't do it. Because it doesn't matter, even if you bought Erling Haaland, right? He's still going to play the poverty football. Like, Man United were not aggressive against Hull in terms of just their shape, where they are on the field. And don't tell me about Harry Maguire. That's got nothing to do with it. Where they're setting up in terms of mentality with the ball, right, is one thing. But where are you without the ball? Why isn't Cunha standing on top of the left back? It's telling me what the mindset is for Carrick. He wants to counterattack against Hull. It's crazy. Like, the other thing is you're playing Andre Santos, and by the way, a guy who I think is probably the most similar to Rodri in the Premier League. I forget what's the Belgian kid's name? Tielemans, Yuri Tielemans, right? I really, really like him. But he's a deep-lying playmaker. So him and Andre Santos are the same guy. And you're playing Bruno Fernandes. You're playing three in midfield. Four in midfield, really. It's crazy. Against Hull. Madness. It's not going to work. It's over. It was over last season. You made a mistake with Ollie. You remember your ex? Just think about your ex that you dumped, and then you got with another guy who had the same behavior, and you thought, no, maybe I'm being a bit much. This is, you know what? I'd rather have a relationship than be single. And then, like, you know what happens after 7 months. Like, you can't stand that. Man United, we've seen this with Ollie. And with Ollie, everybody said it. The poverty football is not going to work because what happens when you need to try and win the Premier League? What happens when you want to try and break into the top four? Because fine, you can do this against Chelsea. You can do this against Man City. You can do this against Arsenal. But you saw what happens against a low block team. What happens against Everton? What happens then? You, where Everton are happy to go 0-0. It's almost like when Hull scored the first goal, there was no plan B. You know what the plan B was? Do plan A better. Kind of like Ange Postecoglou vibes. It's insane. It's insane to me that Man United didn't try to blow the doors off Julian Nagelsmann financially. Andoni Iriola. Like there's a certain type of manager that should be at Man United. And listen, Nagelsmann, he got fired, by the way. Listen, I think Germany are terrible. Nagelsmann's not the problem. Germany have the worst talent I've seen them have since I was born. It's not a Nagelsmann issue. I would go to Nagelsmann or Emre. Now, go early, like January. It's going to be a disaster, right? I mean, let me quickly, I'm going to get my phone. I should have done this a little bit earlier, but I'm going to get my phone quick. And I need to see what Man United's fixtures are. Let's have a look at what's coming up for the Red Devils. Because this could get ugly very quickly. And I'd love to hear from Man United fans, which way should they head? Because keep in mind, they got the Champions League this year as well. Ipswich. I mean, we saw how good Ipswich are, by the way. If you didn't see it, Ipswich are proper. Like, they are not going to be a pushover. And the one thing about Gary O'Neill that I've always liked about him, they beat Sunderland, and Sunderland are a handful, by the way. They beat Sunderland 2-1 and should have, really, it should be 4-1. They're going to come to Old Trafford and play football. Gary O'Neill, he wants to play football. Even at Wolves, you remember, they wanted to play football in the front foot. But so it's Ipswich, It's Everton, it's Man City, it's Fulham, it's Spurs, it's Leeds, it's Bournemouth, it's Chelsea, it's Aston Villa, it's Liverpool, it's Brentford, it's Newcastle. The first real quote-unquote easy game Man United have is Coventry on the 5th of December. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The first 12 fixtures, and I would not consider Ipswich easy, by the way, because I watched the game. Do not think that was a fluke. Like, Ipswich played really, really well against, like, you know how good Sunderland were last season. That's not going to be an easy game. And that's at Old Trafford, by the way. I'm telling you, if you're a Man United fan, I'm not just saying this. You better watch out, because Ipswich play proper football, hey? They knock it about, and he wants to play football, Gary O'Neill. And you look so passive. Ipswich are the type of team that could turn Man United over properly, because Man United's counterattack, if it doesn't work, Ipswich are playing on the front foot. They want to put it on you. Gary O'Neill doesn't play defensive football. I really, really like him. I really, really like him, and I think he could be like a future England manager, right? And he's a really modern, you listen to him talk, he talks like a modern manager even. He actually doesn't even speak like a British manager. He talks like a continental manager. He uses the language of a German or a Spanish manager. So if Man United fan think next week, if you're a fan, you think that Ipswich game, you think, oh, it's going to be get back on top. Let's talk next week. But in general, I mean, listen, you've heard the lineups, right, of your fixtures. 10, 11 games before you have Coventry. This is not going to work. What were they doing? What were they doing? MKT Inspires, let me know your thoughts. It's going to be a catastrophe. Honestly, I think he's going to have to go by sort of, I don't know if he lost 10 games. And the thing is, you're going to have to go after Nagelsmann now, because Nagelsmann's going to get PSG, Barcelona, Chelsea, you know. I mean, I hope Alonso is long-term, but it's Chelsea. Man City, right? Man City, that Maresca, I've got him on red alert. Like, Nagelsmann's going to get a big job. It's going to happen. So if you're Man United, you probably have to move in January. MKT Inspires, let me know your thoughts. I watched the first 15 minutes. I didn't actually watch it live, but I rewatched the whole game. So I came into the game live at 2-0 down. So just into the second half, about 60 minutes. But I rewatched the whole game, and just watching the game, because I watch with no commentary, right? So I watch all sport with no commentary, because I want to know what I'm watching without the commentators influencing what I'm watching. So I've, for about a decade, I've watched, unless I'm watching at a pub or with friends, but I watch with no commentary. And I was just watching, like, you're listening to this, you're a football fan, you know what's going on, right? You've been watching football your whole life. Don't let anybody tell you don't know what's happening. Like, you don't need to be Jose Mourinho to watch a game and go, oh, that team's on top, right? After 10 minutes, you can tell. 5 minutes, you can tell. Like, Hull were by far the more aggressive team, even though Man United had the ball more. And I thought, this is wrong. This is wrong. Why does the Hull goalkeeper get 30 seconds standing on the ball? It's wrong. Like, I could see it. I could see that Hull were in the ascendancy and also more cohesive. It's wrong. I don't know. You tell me. MKT Inspires, let me know your thoughts. Let me know your thoughts. By the way, we're going to have a rugby podcast as well. It'll come out depending on when it's ready. So we've already recorded it. So the rugby podcast reviewing the weekend will come out some stage, depending when you're listening to this, it'll come out after this podcast. So That's why I'm not doing any rugby on here. There's myself and Lesego have reviewed the Bok game on the weekend. By the way, the Springboks have announced their team. So we did discuss the changes that they made, why they made it. We also discussed on the rugby podcast the value of winning between games. We discussed Sasha Feinberg's performance. There was a listener question, by the way. So that's on YouTube as well. So if you'd like to watch the rugby podcast on YouTube, you can go to the MKT Show podcast. There's one from last week, and then the new one will be up. Depending when you're listening to this again, it's the 25th. So it'll be up on the 25th sometime on YouTube. Not sure what time, probably 6 p.m. South African time or European time on... Yeah, around 6 p.m. is when you can look out for it. But again, this is a podcast, so you might not be listening. So the 26th, 6 p.m. if you're listening to this in the morning on your way to work. But otherwise, yeah, go to YouTube, the MKT Show podcast. That's why I'm not doing any rugby on here. There's separate content for that. Myself, Lesego Thomas, we've done that. So yeah, we've sort of covered sort of everything there. And if you'd like to get your question answered about the rugby, slide in the DMs, MKT Inspires, the MKT Show. Otherwise, on YouTube or on the, because it comes out as a podcast as well. So it'll come out as audio and on YouTube for the rugby podcast and this, they'll be separate, is leave a comment on the show on YouTube. Otherwise, leave a comment on Spotify. Otherwise, MKT Inspires, and I'll answer your question. So just say, hey, this is for the rugby podcast or it's for the MKT show. We can separate the two and answer the question on the rugby show if it's for the rugby. Otherwise, MKT Inspires for here. And we'll keep it rolling. You know, we're back as much as possible. I'm running another trail race in 2 weeks on the European continent. It's not a big one. It's only a trail marathon, so it's 42 k's. The 110 k race showed me I've got to be in the mountains. I've got to train, so I'm going to use this marathon. A friend of mine had to pull out, and he gave me his marathon entry. So the 5th and the 6th that weekend, we might not have a podcast on the Monday, depending how I feel, depending when I get back and whatever. So it might be delayed that weekend, but we're going to keep rolling. And the MKT show, we up, work has slowed down. And if there's any changes, obviously, I'll try to let you know. But yeah, we're back. It's the season. My name is MKT. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the MKT show. And for now, we are the hell out of here. We'll be right back.